Many Christians know that certain acts will keep them out of heaven. Different sins that you might incur. But many don't realize that our attitude or our disposition is also important in determining where we end up after life. We have to think about what is our attitude. Now, sometimes we hear somebody say, well, he has an attitude. I used to work for a man whose nickname was Yosemite Sam. That was because of his disposition. He was always grouchy. He was cantankerous, is another way to put it. Majority of the time, it was for show. But it was always funny because I have exactly the opposite personality than he does. And we made a great team. But he had an attitude. Attitude, if you look at the definition of it, is a posture, a position a person shows, or meant to show a mental state, an emotion, or a mood. Just the way we sit, just the way we act, shows at least a glimpse of what's going on in our minds. The manner of how we feel or think that shows one's disposition, your opinion about something. Like, for instance, especially when you get a young person at the dinner table and you give them something they don't like, they don't have to say anything. You know exactly what they're thinking by their actions, by their attitude, by how they act. There are a number of passages that discuss our attitudes, and there are many passages that instruct us that we need to watch our disposition. Because our attitudes are important in getting along with other people. For instance, if you think about it, if you got somebody who's always complaining, that's the type of person you just don't really like being around. It gets to you, it wears on you after a while. I get nervous being around a person who can't control their anger because you just don't know when the next explosion is going to happen. Attitudes are often the catalyst for things like divorces or congregations splitting. Attitudes are hard to change. But they have to be changed if we expect for ourselves to conform ourselves to God's will. So let's take a look at each one. Suppose you're crossing a street when suddenly a huge truck comes right at you and you're petrified and you know this is it. All at once, a man grabs you and pushes you out of the way just as his truck speeds by. You get up and look at the man who's lying on the ground, breathing hard from exhaustion, and you dust yourself off and without a word walk away. That would be ingratitude. In 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. And in verse 2. 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting with verse 2. So, for men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious, gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding a form of godliness, although they have denied his power. Avoid such men as these. In that list of all sorts of bad attitudes is being ungrateful. And you think about the people around us, and a lot of times people are just not grateful for what they have. They're not thankful. Some people go through life never appreciating what they have. They're always dissatisfied with everybody about everything. You know, we can become ungrateful. We can show ourselves being ungrateful. when people ignore their responsibilities, such as a congregation. They're saying, I don't care that much about Jesus dying on the cross for me. I have other things that I'd rather do. Or being too tired to attend worship service. Think about what Christ did for us. The fact that he died. He went out of his way. Something he did not have to do. That we might be saved. If you feel like complaining about going, say, to like a special Bible study. Or some other extra task, like, you know, next month we got a booth that we need a man. Well, think about what God has done for us. The gifts and the blessings that we have in our lives. We ought to be thankful and willing to give just a small portion of our time back to help him out and do his will. Another attitude that we ought to think about, say a man, husband, and a father, spends every available dollar on his fishing boat. Every chance he gets, he goes on a fishing trip with his buddies. During the summer months, it's practically every weekend and several nights a week. And once his wife asked him if he could take the family to a circus that was coming to town next week. And the husband begins to rant and rave about how he can't afford it. Besides, he has a fishing trip the next weekend. That attitude is selfish. Selfishness is why many marriages fail. Husbands and wives are too busy trying to figure out what they can get out of the relationship instead of thinking about what they can put into the marriage. Over in Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4. Actually, we'll start with verse 3. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Life as a Christian is not about me. It's about my serving other people. And if all of us work that way, how much smoother life would be. Selfishness can divide a congregation. And when you hear brethren sometimes arguing, notice how often it's about what I want instead of what the brethren need. Another attitude that we should consider is that of stubbornness. A mother repeatedly told her little boy to sit down. The boy continued to stand, disobeying his mother. Finally, the mother plopped him down in a chair. Fuming, the boy says, I may be sitting down on the outside, but I'm still standing up on the inside. That's stubbornness. Some people just can't admit they're wrong. I was having a conversation last week with somebody via email. They quoted something supposedly I wrote, and I pointed out that quote was not in the article that I wrote. In fact, I looked and I can't find any article that had that in there. And I pointed out that she went off on a tangent based on a misquote. Instead of saying, you know, oops, I got that wrong, she just tried to hammer it just that much harder. I pointed out again that even in the second time around, she misquoted even what I just wrote to her and still got it wrong and tried to repeat it. And somehow it became my fault. Some people are just stubborn. They can't admit they're wrong. In Deuteronomy chapter 9, Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 27. It says, remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Do not look at the stubbornness of this people or act at their wickedness of their sin. One of the reasons why Israel at Sinai sinned was due to their stubbornness. They just would not give up their idols. They would not give up their desires. They would not conform themselves to God's will. In Judges chapter 2, Judges chapter 2 and verse 19, it says, but when it came when the judge died, that they would turn back and act more corruptly than their fathers, in following other gods to serve them and bow down to them, they did not abandon their practice or their stubborn ways. Even hundreds of years later, during the time of the judges, Israel was still stubbornly hanging on to idolatry. And that's amazing because God proves in so many ways, with so many miracles, that He is God and God alone. And yet Israel doesn't give up idols. They don't give up doing it things their way. Even in the time after Christ died, in Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2, and starting with verse 5. Paul gives this charge to them. He says, but because of your stubbornness and unrepentant heart, you're storing up wrath for yourselves in a day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God. The Jews were still being stubborn. In this particular case, they couldn't believe that Gentiles possibly could be saved. All Gentiles were bad, period. And they could not see their own sins because of their stubbornness. Then there's another attitude. There once was an elderly lady who complained about everything. The preacher of the congregation she attended would occasionally stop by and visit her. During each visit, the poor preacher was subjected to a long speech about how terrible life was. During one visit, the preacher noticed how well the woman's apple orchard was doing. The trees were beautiful, full of beautiful red apples. Finally, the preacher thought he found something about which the old woman could not complain. However, he was flabbergasted when she said, I won't have any rotten ones for the pigs. That's discontent. There's nothing wrong with aspiring to better oneself. But it has to be tempered with the attitude of contentment. Being happy with what you have and who you are and how things are in your life. We have to be satisfied as well as working to prove ourselves at the same time. In Philippians chapter 4, Philippians chapter 4, and in verse 11, it says, not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. That's the key to contentment. I can live through anything knowing that Christ is by my side. It doesn't have to be just prosperity. I can get through hardships and bad times when everything looks like it's collapsing around me. That's how people got through slavery. That's how people got through shipwrecks and other disasters. Even in bad circumstances, one can be content with what one has at that time. George dropped out of high school when he was 17 to begin working at the local factory. His parents had urged him to remain in high school so that he could get a diploma. However, at the time, George thought school was just a lot of foolishness. Later, he married a young woman, and eventually they had 3 kids. For 20 years, George had worked long, hard hours at the plant, and he had very little to show for it. He never went back to school to get his GED. In fact, he had done very little to improve himself. Consequently, he turned into a bitter, miserable human being. In contrast, his brother Jim had remained in school and continued into college, receiving a degree in business management. He was the plant manager now at the very plant George was working. Jim and his wife owned a beautiful home, and they had a lovely family. But every time George saw his brother at the plant, he was filled with hateful feelings. He hated Jim. George didn't think it was fair that his younger brother had done so much better in life than he did. Jim would always try to stop by George's station and speak with him, but George would always look the other way, refusing to speak. And that's what we mean by envy. Wanting what somebody else has. Envy is a work of the flesh. Take a look at Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5. Got Ephesians here. Hold on a second. Galatians chapter 5. I'm going to start with verse 19. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousies, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, which I forewarned you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. We can't get to heaven with these types of bad attitudes, including envy. Envy is feeling sorry for yourself, having hard feelings towards others who are more fortunate than you are. You think about it, you know, Cain envied Abel. Instead of improving himself, which God offered and says, if you do right, then will you not be also accepted? Envy caused Cain to lead him to kill his brother. We can't let bad attitudes run our lives. We have to cultivate attitudes that bring us up, help us get towards heaven, and help each other get there as well. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brethren on your behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.